This morning, I do want to introduce a special guest that will be with our community speaking today. So Kelly Cutberth and her family, Stephen, and their many kids were a part of our community at Vox back when we were in Space 12. And she was part of our leadership team. She helped oversee our partnerships team for many years. And she was also part of our preaching team, which I think Jenna mentioned this a few weeks ago, but I think Kelly's probably the first, maybe only, person who's ever preached pregnant before in our community. So such a milestone for our community. But we do want to welcome Kelly back. They're out in Elgin now, but she's graciously willing to join us this morning and to share with us. So welcome, Kelly.
Thank you very much. It's been a minute. Thank you. Good morning. It's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me back. As Waylon said, my name's Kelly, and we live just 20 miles east of here now in Elgin. I live with my husband Stephen, and I think we have a picture of our family on a recent road trip to California. Yes, those are our kids. We have Amelia is 8, Clara's 6, Ben is 4, and Delaney's about a year and a half. And we called Vox home for over 10 years, and we live just down the road from both of our spaces most of the time. It's a little bit weird to be here as a visitor and not a regular weekly participant. So as I was preparing for this morning, I was reflecting back on our time here and what an anchor this community was for me. I think you'll see some old photos behind me. When I was new to Texas and newly engaged and didn't know anyone else in the city, Vox was what made Austin home. We gave each other 3 a.m. rides to the airport. We brought countless meals. We engaged in what could be called breaking and entering to bring our friends what they needed before they brought their new son home from the hospital. We shared potlucks, 1,000 meetings, midweek group birthday celebrations, and we camped, lunched, hiked. We did life together, and I'm really grateful. While this community is a place I feel fairly comfortable around, I definitely questioned whether I was the right person to lead you all this morning when I looked at our lectionary texts. And not because they're tricky passages that involve violence or misogyny, or because they're obscure Old Testament analogy or stories, or they involve some unrelatable analogy, but because they're so well known. If you walk into any Hobby Lobby, you're bound to see these verses on a throw pillow or a rustic looking piece of wood. Verses like Acts 4:11, "This Jesus is the stone that was rejected by you, the builders. It has become the cornerstone." Or 1 John 3:16 and 18, "We know love by this, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for one another." And "Little children, let us love not in word or speech, but in deed and truth." Or John 10:11, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep." And of course, Psalm 23, our text for this morning, which is probably the most well-known of all the Psalms. So I wondered, what could I possibly offer that wouldn't sound trite or shallow, that hasn't been said before? So many books have been written about this Psalm of David, a gazillion sermons and songs, analogies, stories. What could I possibly offer you? But I think I was getting hung up on a misconception that I often catch myself hanging up on when preparing for a homily, which is that sermons should be new, exciting, offer some completely revelatory take on the scripture, or involve some super cool story. They're usually also given by someone with a degree in theology, which I do not have. But what if I didn't need to look outside myself for my offering? What if this psalm doesn't need to be turned into something new today? I think the familiar can often offer comfort and remind us of what's true beneath the hype and the humor. Sometimes when something is too well known, it loses its meaning, but that doesn't make it meaningless. My hope this morning, even if my voice isn't familiar to you, is that you can receive this psalm with comfort, and I hope you feel reminded of what's familiar and true. With that, let us begin. Our text says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in right paths for his name's sake." When I read these verses, I kind of feel my shoulders come down, my breath deepens. I see the imagery of a pasture, of a shepherd whose primary job is to watch out and care for his sheep. You'll see a few artist depictions of shepherds behind me. These are verses of comfort. They're verses of care, of David, the shepherd turned king, talking about God in the most familiar way possible. God is like the shepherd who makes sure the sheep have what they need. And how does the shepherd provide for the sheep's needs? By reminding the sheep to lie down where it's safe, taking the sheep to drink water. Rest and water. These aren't shocking ideas for self-care, but I wind up needing to be reminded of them more often than I'd like to admit. I recently started seeing a physical therapist again, and her advice to me really surprised me. I know last week Waylon was talking about a recent injury, and so in the process of recovery, I feel like I'm answering his question here. In February, had finally jog-walked my first half marathon. My sisters flew out to do it with me, and we wound up running more than we thought we would, albeit still very slowly. And as we crossed the finish line, I felt proud and excited and exhausted, but then something felt off. Within an hour of finishing the race, I realized I had re-injured my pelvic floor. And if you don't know what your pelvic floor is, that sounds about right. It's a behind-the-scenes group of muscles and the kind that kind of quietly holds things together. And as Waylon mentioned and Jenna mentioned, as the person who preaches while pregnant, it makes sense that I would probably be the first person to mention her pelvic floor in a homily, which I can assure you I never thought I would do. But here we are. And I wound up back in pelvic floor physical therapy. And I was sure my physical therapist was going to tell me I'd have to overhaul my routine, possibly that I'd never be able to run or lift my big kids again. I was also fairly confident she was going to assign me daily workouts with weights. And to be honest, I totally slacked on those last time I was in pelvic floor PT. But this time I was committed. I would do the exercises. I would stick with it. But instead, her big assignment to me was to pay attention to my breathing and drink more water. Literally water and air. She said my dehydration and the way that I was breathing and using my core during exercise was putting pressure on my pelvic floor. So yes, there would be more exercises to come, and I had to stop running for now. But she actually thinks the race was just a part of a bigger picture of my injury, one of many things that led to my situation. She told me before we did any bigger movements, I needed to focus on the basics. She was shepherding me to simple, familiar practices, leading me back like a shepherd guides her sheep to a safe place to drink and rest. God helps me lie down in green pastures, leads me beside still waters, restores my soul. Sometimes we need to be reminded to breathe, to rest, to drink a glass of water. This isn't new information. It sure sounds familiar. But whether or not you've had a recent injury, we all sometimes need to remember to move in a way that doesn't increase our pressure, but that eases the burdens we carry. So let this be your gentle nudge this week, your shepherd's reminder to breathe deeply, to nourish yourself. This breath and this water, this rest, this is what restores our souls. So as a practice, I thought we could take a deep breath together. I feel like a yoga instructor. So kind of soften your shoulders, and we'll take a big inhale and exhale. Let's continue with our psalm. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. We're no longer in the peaceful pasture now. The imagery is darker. There are deep valleys and enemies. The stuff is hitting the fan. What I love about this and in general about the Psalms is that at no point are we told everything's fine now, God's with us, so we have no more problems. The Psalms are great for naming the hard stuff we're facing. We are walking through dark valleys. We're sitting face to face with enemies. Now, this text does say, I fear no evil, but I don't think it's saying we'll never be afraid or that David was never afraid. Or maybe it is, but certainly for me, I can't offer you advice on a life without fear. I'm a seriously insecure person, and some of you might feel or have felt fearless because of your faith, but that's not been my experience. What I imagine when I read this is being totally afraid, but whispering to yourself, I fear no evil, I fear no evil, I fear no evil. Maybe it's not that you're not afraid, but it's that fear doesn't win. Fear doesn't get the last word, because we're not alone. God is with us. David writes of comfort in the shepherd's staff because it was a symbol of authority. And I'll caution us against thinking of this staff as a weapon or like the rider's whip, because what we know about shepherds is that a shepherd isn't beating the sheep with their staff. They gently guide the sheep. They use their staff to fend off predators. The rod and staff are a signal to us, even when things seem bleak, that we can find our safety in God and not in our surroundings. I like what Kate Bowler says about the comfort the Psalms offer. She's a writer and professor at Duke Divinity School, and she writes, "The psalmist acknowledges the realities that surround us. Though the world as we know it has been upended, it is right there we can find shelter with God, our refuge. God is our safe place, not after the worst is over or before the other shoe drops, but right in the midst of our pain and grief and loss. God is our place of peace as the world around us rages on." Now, I'm still wary of anyone telling me when I'm exhausted and afraid and staring up at the walls of a deep, dark valley that it's going to be fine because God's in control. It's not easy. This holding on to peace and safety is bleak and hard, especially when facing our deepest fears. My 6-year-old daughter, Clara, has been having a hard time falling asleep lately because she's scared of dying. So now, after I give her a hug and a kiss, most nights she pulls me back with a question or worry, like, "Mom, if lightning struck our house, would I die?" And then after I answer that one, "But what if lightning struck the window right by my bed? Or what if it started a fire in my room?" And after I explain smoke alarms to her, she says, "What if it was a little fire, so small that it barely made any smoke?" You can see this back and forth that we go through. And after many of these scenarios, during which I explain how rare it is to be struck by lightning and how well smoke alarms work, she'll ask, "Mom, do you think something really rare will happen to me before I wake up?" There's no out-logicking this kid. And in addition to sending me to bed with my worst fears swirling in my brain of the many ways my children could die, her line of questions makes me realize that there's not an answer I can give her that will make her feel better. Try as I might, I can't make the problem of dying go away. She's just scared, facing the darkness in her room, and what she really wants is for me to stay with her. My being there is what comforts her. Each question she asks is another minute I'm in the room with her, answering her. So I stay for a while. I try to help her come up with something else to think about, and eventually she falls asleep, and then I have to try and go to sleep. But I think that's what God's like. Rachel Held Evans and Matthew Paul Turner write in their children's book, What is God Like? God is like a shepherd, brave and good, a protector who loves her sheep so much that she watches over all of them and knows each of their names by heart. God, as the shepherd, goes with us into the dark valleys, knows our biggest fears, watches over us as we sleep. She's ready to protect us, setting the table so we don't forget to eat, reminding us to breathe, rest, drink water. So maybe as a practice this week, I invite you to think of a person or a place that makes you feel safe. It could be a person who you have access to or someone who lives far away or in memory. And just try to feel the comfort of their presence this week when you need it. God is our place of peace as the world around us rages on. Psalm 23 ends with this verse. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long. I had always read this last verse as a promise of heaven, probably because the translations I used to use or used to read ended with, "I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever." And forever is future leaning. But for the first time, as I was reading this a few weeks ago, I saw this hope and promise of goodness for my whole life long, referring to our living days here on earth right now. Again, this is not an assurance because everything is fine now or because someday later when we die, we'll receive goodness in heaven. It's an assurance for the life we're living right now. I think this ties into the idea of embodied faith that you've been talking about at Vox, and I love exploring this because an embodied faith refuses to separate our lived experience from our spirituality. An embodied faith recognizes that even when I'm burnt out and need reminders just to breathe and drink water, even when I'm beyond tired physically and emotionally, even when my kids are so scared they can't sleep at night, even though I'm facing enemies and it feels like the sky is falling, the planet's in distress, people everywhere are in distress, even still, God is our good shepherd. God's goodness is with me now and will follow me wherever I go. It's not either or, it's both and. But that's always easier said than done, right? When my family moved to Elgin almost 2 years ago, it was good and exciting, especially if you ask my ever optimistic husband, and also really hard and scary. The list of reasons I was anxious was long. What would Elgin be like? I grew up in the Bay Area in California. I never thought I would live in a small Texas town. Would it be more like a continuation of Austin farther east, or more likely something entirely different? I was anxious about important things like, are there any decent coffee shops? Where would we get takeout? And also, being pregnant with our fourth child, I worried about things like, would the midwife get to the house in time? Who would bring us meals after the baby was born? Yes, we'd have more room for our kids, but how could we raise another baby without our village close by? And to be honest, we were still weary and recovering from COVID. We actually all got COVID during the month right before we moved. And more than that, I still hadn't recovered from the loss of community and stability and connection we suffered during those first 2 years of the pandemic. And then there was the logistical poop storm of trying to move while in my third trimester, while having three other young kids, and Stephen was traveling a lot for work, and it was a triple-digit summer. What I'm trying to say is, looking back, it's like I was wondering if goodness and mercy would follow us when we moved. Would I be okay? Would the house we're dwelling in now be a house we feel God's presence in? I think if we're human, we know this feeling. I know everyone I know in this room knows this feeling. To believe in God's goodness and mercy will be with us all our days, that's gonna cover some hard days. We're starting a new school, we're facing a new diagnosis, we've lost a loved one, a relationship is ending, we're having to start over from scratch. This lovely assurance Psalm 23 offers, it often feels anything but sure, and it usually takes time before we can see the evidence of God's presence in and through these situations. I know Kimberly talked about this a few, weeks ago when she shared, and it really stuck with me. For us, nearly 2 years later, I can now see some evidence that goodness has been following us. In fact, when our youngest Delaney was born a few months after we moved, several of you followed us out to Elgin and brought us meals. You came and held our baby and hugged us, which was especially meaningful. This community that had anchored us when we lived right down the road showed up even when we were a trudge through traffic away. And goodness showed up in new ways too. We visited a little 120-year-old Presbyterian church in downtown Elgin who welcomed us so genuinely and wholeheartedly that we kept going back. Stephen likes to say we brought the average age down by 30 years when we first showed up, but they loved us and our kids and our noises and disruptions that we brought. This church surprised us in so many ways, one of which is with a centuries-old church practice that falls on the Sunday after Easter called Holy Humor Sunday. And I think this is us a couple weeks ago. They said to dress up in silly attire, and we took the assignment very seriously. It's the first time my kids have ever been dressed and ready to go early to church. We laughed and played kazoos and silly balloon games and shared an open-ended discussion on living within our capacity. Goodness and mercy followed us through this church in Elgin. We also met neighbors who surprised me with their giant rainbow flags, and neighbors who I disagree with wholly on certain issues, but who bring my kids Christmas and Easter, and just because they were cleaning out their upstairs and found this box of Disney toys on a Tuesday gifts. Neighbors like my friend Alicia, who became my first coffee shop date, then later pottery class companion and book club leader, who just last week dropped off this bouquet of flowers on my porch after I texted her about my totally crap morning. And then the second bouquet was brought over by my petite 5-year-old neighbor, Addie, and her mom this past Friday, just because they had some extra flowers from their garden. Just because. When we dance at the Friday night music in the park and run into neighbors, or when we pick up a homemade pastry from the local coffee shop. And while we no longer have a dozen amazing coffee shops within a mile of us, we have one really good one, which, as my friend Kristen says, is all you need. In those moments, I can see the goodness and mercy that followed us. It feels on some days like we're dwelling in the house of the Lord. Alicia, my neighbor, calls these glimmers. She's a therapist who specializes in parent and caregiver burnout, particularly for those who are or have kids who are neurodiverse. And so she knows the value of finding and looking for those tiny moments of goodness. These glimmers of hope are like little drops of evidence that God, our shepherd, never left us behind. I wonder if looking at your life now, exactly as it is, or reflecting back on a time when you were in the dark valleys, if you can see small moments of embodied hope. What does it feel like to notice those? Maybe as a spiritual practice, you can think of a glimmer of hope, of evidence you've seen in your life this week of goodness and mercy. And try writing it down or text a friend or just notice it and pay attention. What I believe for all of us is that while Psalm 23 may be ubiquitous in Christian culture and so very familiar, it's also true. It offers us both and hope. Yes, things can be awful and scary, and yes, things are also wonderful and silly and beautiful. As Anne Lamott says, the human condition is both the mess and the tenderness. It's both and. I am absolutely still operating from a place of burnout a lot of the time. I'm stretched thin and tired, but I'm also being shepherded to new practices and places and people that help me breathe deeply and put less pressure on myself. Our 6-year-old Clara is still this week asking me a dozen questions about death before she falls asleep. And I feel scared and like I have no clue what I'm doing most of the time. But I try to believe in God, my shepherd, standing with me in the valleys, promising me goodness and mercy every day, including this day we're living right now. So as we close today, I thought I'd share a haiku my daughter Amelia wrote a while ago. She wrote it in gold shimmery gel pen, and it sat on my desk as I wrote this homily, so it felt like a fitting way to close. She wrote, "A light shines on me. I am who you see today. The darkness is gone." This is my prayer for us. Amen.